Every week, Jonathan de Burka Butler brings us news from around the world that sometimes doesn't hit our headlines.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Jonathan de Burka Butler joins us once again to bring us some stories from other parts of the world. Good afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you going on?
We're going to Malaysia first, where there's a sorcerer on the loose.
There is indeed. This is a man by the name of Ibrahim Matzin. He's better known as Raja Bomo. Now, he would not be the only Bomo in Malaysia. Bomos are effectively shaman who have been knocking around Malaysia since the dawn of time, as Tom Dunn might say, and they've been around for a very long time and they're an inherent part of the culture, but they've taken a bit of a dip in popularity ever since there's been a bit of a resurgence in Islam within Malaysia during the 70s and 80s, so people kind of look at them a bit suspiciously now. But this particular guy anyway, Raja Bomo, he first came to attention during that terrible Malaysia plane crash a number of years ago. He came up with this theory that the plane was actually trapped in a cloud somewhere between the China and the Philippines and somewhere else. And of course, he was going to use all his powers to get it out. He said it'd be out in 25 years. But in more recently, he's been filmed trying to smooth over the diplomatic problems between Malaysia and North Korea. So there's
good luck with that.
Yeah. So there's a short film of it. I sent it out on Twitter. Actually, you can have a look at it of him performing the ritual, and it's all a bit mad, and it seems fairly innocent, and it was taken by most people as a bit of a laugh. But now it's got to a serious point where three muftis, Islamic teachers, basically have come out against him and have, you know, basically complained about him to the police. And so now the police have to open an investigation along with the Islamic organization that looks after that kind of thing there, the Federal Territories Islamic Religious Department. So it's all got a bit out of hand now, and the police are looking for him and he's in hiding. So I don't know, it seems a little bit crazy.
Yeah, and because the muftis have complained about it, is it because he's engaged in un-Islamic practices? Yeah,
that's what they're saying, basically. So they'd be looking at it from a sort of puritanical point of view, and they'd be saying, you know, throwing coconuts into the sea and you know, being particularly demonstrative is not the way to go about, you know, smoothing over diplomatic ties. And they're basically saying that he's bringing Islam into disrepute. And they do have blasphemy laws there, and they can be quite severe. So, you know, penalties range from, you know, 3 years in prison and a couple of thousand euros of a fine. So it could end up being quite serious for him, but let's hope it doesn't.
Right. Okay, that's very odd. But they do this kind of thing. Those laws must be fairly wide-ranging.
They are. I mean, there's a few examples. I mean, they don't just cover Islam, it should be said as well. Yeah. I mean, there was a paper shut down 10 years ago for publishing a picture of Jesus with a cigarette and a beer can. So they do cover all, you know, religions. So it's not just them. But yeah, they are. The laws are quite wide-ranging, and it'll be open to interpretation, I suppose. You know, we'll see what happens.
Right. Okay, Manus Island we're going to first. You should start by telling us where is Manus Island?
It's a part of, effectively, it's part of Papua New Guinea, and it's one of those islands along with Nauru that has been looking after refugees who've been trying to get to Australia, and they were cut off and brought to this particular island a number of years ago. Now, last year, the Supreme Court of Papua New Guinea said that this detention centre, as it was then, should be closed down. And the government of Papua New Guinea said, OK, we will. But it hasn't been, technically speaking anyway, closed down yet. And a riot was sparked off the other day when the security company that was running the area put up a fence between people who were trying to get their dinner and the people who were dishing it out. They were saying that some of the refugees were overzealous and were taking too much food, so they need to, you know, dish out the food more proportionately. And the refugees didn't like it. One refugee who happened to be a little bit shorter than others asked, how am I going to get my tray over the fence? And he was told, get somebody to lift you. There was howls of laughter, and then a fight sparked off. So it's indicative of the tension that has grown and has been there ever since this refugee centre was put in place a number of years ago.
Yeah, which is, I suppose, not... quite common around the world, really, at
yes.
this stage of the game. Right, Honduras we're going to now, and this is a story about an assassination plot.
Yeah, this was an assassination plot that happened in September, I think, of 2014 against the president, one Juan Orlando Hernandez. And three people have been convicted. They were convicted last Saturday. So this was a Mexican and two Hondurans. And they were found guilty of plotting to assassinate the president, as I said. The reason for it, why were they trying to get him, was because this president has been particularly strong in going after drugs cartels, at least on the surface, mm-hmm. Because there's other sources that say he might indeed be involved with some drug cartels, or at least involved with people who are involved with drug cartels. But so far, he's sent 13 people that the United States of America have wanted to put on trial back to the United States. There was one case where a family, the Rosenthals, who ran one of the biggest banks in Honduras, they were captured in Miami. I think that was the last thing that we covered on Honduras, actually. And he effectively shut the bank down straight away. The US said, look, we want you to freeze all their assets. And he said, OK, no problem. Don't want anything to do with this. And he closed the bank down basically the next day. So that was quite controversial. So he has made enemies, and as you can imagine. And so that's why they were after him. They haven't been sentenced yet. They will be sentenced on the 24th of April, I believe, and they could get up to 16 years each for this. So, again, we'll see what happens there.
Right. Oh, my word. Right. OK, Spain we're going to now. And this is a story about a Catalan leader has been banned. Banned from where?
Yes, you might remember Artur Mas. He was the president of Catalan for a number of years. He was the last president before the current president. And back in 2014, he held a referendum, a non-binding referendum. It was held in November of 2014, and he was told 5 days before the referendum went ahead by the Spanish Constitutional Court, you're not allowed to do this. But he went ahead with it anyway. He basically said, look, the train is in motion. We're going to go ahead with it. There's millions of people coming out, and this is what we're going to do. So in the end, about 2.5 million people went out and voted. 80% of them said they wanted to break away from Spain.
Okay.
It was non-binding.
Yes.
So he said, look, you know, we were only having a laugh. And actually, in his defence, he said, if they were so worried about it, why didn't they do something to stop it before the 5 days beforehand? So anyway, the state have gone after him now, and they've banned him from taking public office for 2 years, and they fined him just over €36,000 as well.
How many people were eligible to vote of the 2.5 million?
Yeah, good question, because, I mean, some sources will tell you 80% voted to leave, but of course that's not the full picture. It's 5.5 million. Were eligible to vote, and 2.5 million went out to vote. It's still quite a considerable.
It's not
people.
We've had many referendums here with a similar turnout. Now, I suppose if it was something as important as that, you'd expect a higher turnout.
Yeah, and we're going to find out in September, because the Catalans are of course going ahead with a referendum that is going to be binding. And just to wrap up on it, it's worth noting that the last opinion poll that I know of anyway, which was taken in December, has the side that wants to stay with Spain ahead, 46%, and the side that wants to leave on 45%.
That's a very slight margin.
Yes, it is. So that'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
And this takes place in December?
September.
In September.
Yeah. Well, now, the Spanish are trying to stop it, of course.
Right, okay.
And Mariano Rajoy...
Can they stop it?
Well, they can. Mariano Rajoy has said that he might close down schools where polling stations... usually are, and he said he might take over the Catalan police. Now, if I was Mariano Rajoy, I'd threaten it, but I wouldn't go ahead with it, I think. And I might stay quiet, considering the Remain side, if we want to call them that, are saying that they want to stick with Spain. So,
well, if
he
seems to be trying to
tricky.
Thwart a democratic process, then that's hardly going to do him any favours. Interesting, though, how one wonders at that stage of the game, because Brexit will have been triggered, we know that now. What will the Scottish be saying? How might that affect the view in Spain? That's very, very interesting stuff. Right, Benin, we're going to now. And this is a proposal about the term of presidencies.
Yes, which normally when we go to Africa and we're talking about presidencies, we're talking about presidents who are trying to extend their stay. Patrice Talon, who's been there since 2015, he's decided that he's going to shorten the number of terms that a president can be in place. He wants one 6-year term. Now, it's not clear yet whether this is going to apply to him. right? So currently he could go for a second term if he wants to, and he might well do that. He'll turn around and go, oh, well, this will kick in after my second term. we'll wait and see. But not everybody's happy about it. The opposition have basically said, OK, this is going to be presented to Parliament and Parliament are going to put forward this proposal. But the opposition hasn't seen this, this change to the constitution on paper yet. So they're looking for the detail. Now, you might be saying that they're nitpicking, but there you go. But this is what they're doing, and it's very different compared to some of the neighbouring countries.
Yeah, it is, yeah, and kind of refreshing and maybe kind of optimistic.
Absolutely.
Change. Turkey we're going to now, though. This involves Kurds.
It does, and, we're seeing an awful lot of reports about this referendum that's going to happen in April to try and give President Erdogan, more powers. Basically, it's going to turn him from a ceremonial president to the main man in Turkey. Mm-hmm. And it's quite frightening, to be honest with you. But anyway, Erdogan has used this whole coup that happened last July and everything that's going on in Europe and everything that's going on in Syria and Iraq and to kind of cover up what's going on inside. And he's using that to deflect what's happening to the Kurds inside in Turkey. Now, it should be said that there's an awful lot of internal terrorism happening there as well. The Kurds aren't exactly sitting down and being, calm. But a lot of political prisoners have decided that they're going to go on hunger strike now in prisons throughout Turkey. And this is effectively in support of Abdullah Öcalan, who's the leader of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, otherwise known as the PKK.
Yeah.
And they say that he's been very badly treated, that he's been tortured, and this goes across the board for all Kurdish prisoners within the country. And they want to put a stop to it. I think they're also trying to draw attention to this referendum that's happening in April, which they see as as a vote for Erdogan to press ahead with, further quelling the attempts of the Kurds to get separation.
So how many people? Or is there even a vague figure as to how many people might be going on hunger strike?
Well, I imagine it's going to be in the hundreds, if not in the hundreds at least. I mean, at the moment, I know there's inmates in three prisons and they total about 40 people at the minute.
Yeah.
28 of them are on a month-long hunger strike already. So hundreds more are going to join, I imagine.
Right, Kurdistan we're going to now, and this is a story about villagers demanding relocation after a plane crashed.
Yes, and I heard nothing about this plane crash, I have to say. It happened back in January, and it was absolutely harrowing. This was a Turkish-owned plane. It was on its way from Hong Kong on the way to Istanbul, and it crashed just before landing near the capital of Bishkek. Four of the crew were killed, and 38 people were killed on the ground, 14 of them children. I didn't see anything about this until now. But anyway, some of the residents of this particular village, Dakasu, it's called, they held a protest basically saying that they wanted to be resettled and that they were looking for compensation for what happened to them as a result of this particular crash. Now, the authorities there have said that there's nowhere for them to be resettled, but they have promised compensation in the near future. Interestingly, when you dig a little bit deeper into this, it's not quite clear what the plane was doing near Bishkek in the first place. When it crashed, and it was a cargo plane, and its cargo was, unloaded onto the ground, it was all luxury items, iPhones and luxury lighters and all sorts of things. And there is speculation, because a parliamentary investigation has gone into it now, that it might have been for the black market in Kyrgyzstan. So there's an investigation ongoing, and it's all very dark and mysterious.
Right. But presumably this particular village was destroyed by this plane.
Yeah, essentially it was.
Yeah,
and hence they want to be moved. Yeah.
Belarus we're going to finally, and the protest leaders have been arrested. Why?
Yes, protest leaders, about 50 of them altogether, they were protesting against a tax that was brought in by Alexander Lukashenko. He's one of these leaders, been around since 1994. Doesn't like his authority to be questioned, and for that reason he has arrested these leaders. The tax was on unemployed people. Okay, so he brought in this idea back in 2014 because he basically likes his economic policy, and he has on the surface zero unemployment.
Yeah.
Now, actually, there's something like 15 to 20% unemployment in the country, but he says it's zero and it's a reflection on his good economic policy. So he slapped this tax, flat tax of €250 on the unemployed. It came out earlier this year and obviously people weren't happy about it. Normally they wouldn't protest because it means a lot of trouble, but they've gone out in vast numbers now and want this tax to be stopped.
So they were protesting over unemployment, which officially doesn't exist because there's a taxation on unemployed people who officially don't exist.
Indeed, exactly.
It's hard to know how that works, really, or what they call all that. Right, what should we look forward to, look out for over the coming week or so?
Yes, on the 24th, there's going to be a citizens' dialogue on rural development in Zagreb with Commissioner Phil Hogan.
Thank God, so he's there to liven things up, yeah.
So get your tickets for that. On the 26th, there's an elections in Bulgaria, and Theresa May is going to be visiting Wales this week. A lot of talk about Scotland and Northern Ireland wanting to stay in the European Union, but a lot of people don't mention the fact that Wales actually voted 52.5% to leave the European Union. So she'll probably get quite a bit of support there.
Plus she also referred to Wales recently as a region rather than a nation.
Maybe she won't.
As you can imagine,
then.
Didn't go down that well. Jonathan, thanks a million for coming into us.
Sure.
Jonathan de Burka Butler there. We'll take a break, back in a couple of minutes.
More from around the world on Moncrief every Tuesday from 2:40.